You are tuned in to the Mark Order Podcast. Join the Mark Order.
Hello, hello. It is Wednesday night, and I'm controlling the music scene here. I mean, today, Hard Cut by Ryan. It is me, Ryan, of the Mark Order Podcast, joined, as most always, by my co-host, Joe. How you doing, Joe?
Most always, I'll take that. I'm doing well, Ryan. How are you?
Good, you know. It may or may not just be us tonight. We'll have to see if there's any returns like there was at the pay-per-view. The Revolution was just Return-illusion.
Well done. Well done.
It felt like almost every match had a return or a shocking something.
It did. So, I mean, people got their money worth, I guess.
You know, I'm one to question, does one return overset another, or does it add on like a just keep upping the
You know,
I'm trying to think. You had Edge and you had Copeland and Christian, which everyone kind of thought was going to happen.
Okay, that's one.
You had Rousey debut.
Sure.
Which...
Speaking of return and debut.
I don't know. Maybe there's... Whose music could that be?
Jim Johnson era music. Yes.
It's Kate.
Music? What's going on, fellas? How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good, Joe. It's so good to see you and so many of your shoes. What a fun background.
We were just talking how this is such a heavy return episode of the Mark Order with all of us returning.
Bang. It's just like Revolution. We had like Kenny and Ronda and Cope and Christian and Ospreay. So we're on brand. Okay. That's what we are. So brand-wise, I feel like the Dark Order doesn't really exist much anymore, so I don't know. But I feel like we're committed to the name, right? We're committed to the bit.
Yeah, we'll just take it over.
Oh, I like that. We can start, yeah. We'll give each other fun names. Do some shit.
That's just ours now.
Sorry I was late. My webcam was being weird, but hello to everybody in the chat. Hi, Taylor Cannon. Hi, Scott George. Hi, Big G. What's cooking? How are you, fellas? How you doing?
Good. You know, just finished my, you gave me time to finish my dinner, which was nice.
Nice. Okay. Nice. I'm glad I was able to provide that for you. I don't know why you're eating at 10:30 at night, but.
Second half. I had some of it earlier and then put it aside and then finished it.
Second dinner. Nice.
Second dinner. Nice.
It's like second breakfast.
Hi, Jesse Ozog.
Oh, him and his wife went to Book of Mormon.
This was like not a great episode of Dynamite, so I think you actually made the right call. But we'll talk about all of it. Did you guys get into the episode at all, or were you just yapping before?
Just started. You just got to us.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, that means I can focus on my work, and I don't have to placate with Ryan here, which is good. But Joel, we missed you last week. How are you?
I'm doing well. Just living the life out here.
Living the dream, right?
Yeah. How was it being back with Ryan last week?
You know.
How many songs did he sing? Zero?
I don't think I was singing any.
You're just encouraging me to sing this week, though, Joe.
How many bad puns did you make?
Oh, as many as I could figure out, but Kate was there with me.
That's the thing. Yeah, that one I can't really. That's a pot kettle situation if I ever heard one. But more people piled into the chat. Hi, Tim McFowell. What's going on? Let's dig into this because I am so tired. I've done so much packing. And I started a new side gig this week, which I'm very excited about. But there is a lot happening in my world. It's a very nice paying side gig, so I'm not mad about it.
I'm going to tell everyone what it is. She's selling drugs, guys.
Yeah, so?
I want you to stop.
We're going to get banned now. YouTube's gonna take down our shit.
I'm kidding, YouTube.
Yeah. It's a joke, YouTube. I'll tell you what hits like a drug, though. A Will Ospreay return. Well, let's not go into depth, but let's talk about the pay-per-view at all. I thought the in-ring was insane. I thought some of the booking was weird. I felt like some of that weird booking carried over into tonight in ways that I don't love. But there was just some absolutely insane matches. Takeshita and Moxley. Brody and Swerve was super, super fun. Andrade and Bandido was probably my match of the night. And that was just like a for funsies kind of thing. And then the main event was obviously insane and had huge implications. Fight Club Select breaking the news that Adam Page was going to be out for a little bit. Had some plan tied off with it is well deserved, because I think the only time he's stepped away is when he's like had kids. Even when he was concussed, he was still doing promos and stuff, like he was still around. So good for him. But I want to know what you guys thought of the pay-per-view. Joe, did you even watch it or did you run from the grind?
I strolled, walked from the grind a little bit.
Okay.
I wasn't able to watch it, so I had to go back and kind of catch up on what was happening with everything.
It is like a full work day, so it is a lot to ask. But did you have any thoughts overall or anything that you found like to be outstanding?
I'm not sold on Rousey being back or being officially in AEW. That's still kind of I don't know if the juice is worth a squeeze. And I'm up in the air as far as how gruesome the death match was. If it was too much, if it wasn't, if it was justified, I'm still kind of, I mean, having watched various playbacks and highlights of it, I'm just kind of on the fence.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I was actually talking to a friend about this earlier, and he had said he felt like the rivalry wasn't so heated it warranted that animosity, which that I actually agreed with, but I felt like because it was all or nothing for Hangman, it was warranted. Like, I felt like it was less about MJF and Hangman and more about Hangman versus this thing that his whole mental health is contingent on. Like, I felt like he should be going to the strongest lengths for it. I will say, I'm not like a deathmatch sicko anyway. Like, I don't hate deathmatches, but I'm not like a bloodluster. But like, there is a point where there's diminishing returns on this stuff. Like, there were like three other matches where people got busted open. There's these type of matches happen really frequently. And I feel like some of the animosity either A, wears off, or B, you have to go through really, really, really extreme lengths, like Joe had mentioned, to make them stand out in any way. Ryan, what were your thoughts on the pay-per-view? I want your thoughts on Ronda too, because that's been certainly a hot topic. But what did you think of the pay-per-view overall and the Texas death, as it were?
So I do agree with both of you. There's a diminishing return on the amount of blood and guts you can have in a single pay-per-view. They should realistically be like, all right, two at most, and they need to be spread out. Like,
yeah.
One early, one late, to keep the flavor different. And just, and all that does is change up the pace. It makes the ones that happen hit a little harder. I kind of expected, obviously, MJF to win. Didn't love it.
Sure.
I don't love the condition. The questionable booking there to me would be have him win pretty much straight up. I felt like you really, just in case you ever need it, having him do something that was even beyond Texas deathmatch cheating would have been worthwhile, just to give you an out if you ever have to use the out to get Hangman back into the title picture. But that's just me. I'll speak on most of the booking decisions as they relate to tonight, because I think some of them, I may not like them, but they make more sense based on where I see they're going with certain things. Rousey, Joe said it best. I don't know if the juice is worth the squeeze. Like, you're not, obviously, I don't think she signed to like a deal. She's got a fight or something coming up. Like, she's a one-off if she's anything. I mean, she did that ROH match however many, like a year or two ago or whatever.
Yeah, like two Decembers ago.
Yeah. I didn't love her last WWE run, so I don't know why. Like, there's nothing off in this time. Yeah. I get it from some standpoint. Like, I'm one of these people who doesn't necessarily agree that you should constantly be chasing the casuals, like that mythical casual. I think you should focus on your core fans, because that's who's going to sustain you as a business. But I do understand the concept of big names do sometimes help bring in people that no one else might look at. And whether people want to admit it or not, she is a big name. People know who she is. So even if they don't like her, they might be like, what is she doing? Let me see this. But yeah, I'm not sold on that at all.
She might be bringing the boom is really what you're saying with the celebrity integration. I get where you're coming from. I'll say this, like, part of my responsibilities at Fight Club is first and foremost not to talk about Fight Club. So I'm really punting it already, but it's to like look up stuff like how many views did the return segment get and things like that. I don't know what AEW's benchmark is for like what they consider good. I know WWE's is about 1 million. Hers had like, I think 500,000 on the long video and like 750,000 on the short. And I was like, let me go and see what her ROH match did. And that had almost 2 million views. That had like 1.95 million views. And I was like, okay, so I don't think 2 years ago Ronda and present day Ronda have that much difference between them. I do also think that AEW fans will judge her based on the in-ring more than anything. Like, I think there's a lot of people that have a lot of issues with Ronda, and that's completely fair. And then there are people that don't give a shit at all about what somebody says outside of the ring, and that's their prerogative too. But it's like everybody got so mad about the Will Ospreay thing of him including Paul Robinson, who had Me Too allegations or speaking out allegations. And then he showed back up at the pay-per-view and everybody was so excited to see him. Like, these things aren't long lived. And from those numbers, what it tells me is like people have more of an interest in seeing Ronda in the ring. Now, I'll say this. I think the AEW ROH presentation lends itself much better to what she's doing. And I do think her first run was better. Her second run also, well, abysmal, and she was a part of it, so she's not exempt from that, obviously. That was like the end of the Vince era. And I think people, I learned this from a talent who was in WWE at the time. The rules that they just had on people at that time were insane. Don't walk around the ring, be staring at the camera. We're going to pipe in crowd noise. So be sure you have to pause at this part. Make sure you listen for it. They had no idea how to write for her. They had no idea how to write the feuds for her. So it was also hamstrung in a lot of ways too. So I'm like, I'm somewhere in between. Like, I'm not excited about it as is, but I think like I have an open mind to see, because I actually thought the ROH match was really good. It was also against Athena and Billy Stark. So it's like, that's a hell of a duo to go up against, of course, as well. So yeah, that was, I think, a point of contention. There is this fight that she has with Gina Carano coming up in July. One thing I will always side with her on is her advocacy for speaking up about fighters' pay, because it's so much worse than in wrestling. And largely, much like how when WWE was the only game in town, it was bad for wrestling. When UFC was realistically the only game in town, it's bad for fighters. And, you know, they don't have weekly TV paychecks. So they get fight paychecks, and that's really rough to live off of. So I do applaud that from her. I can at least say that. There's a lot of things she said in the past that I disagree with, but some she's apologized for. And I'm not someone that sits around trying to distinguish whether someone's apology is sincere or not. I let their following actions dictate that. And I will always side with the fighters making more money, especially on the mixed martial arts side, because it's a way worse landscape there now. Anything else about Revolution you guys want to talk about? I Andrade and Bandido surprised me, but didn't surprise me. Like, I thought that match was going to be great. I thought it had the potential to be a show stealer. It was like my favorite thing by a pretty decent margin. I had so much fun with it. The dueling pants spot was so funny. Like, Bandido trying to break off his breakaway pants, but not being able to get them off. And then Andrade just kneeing him in the fucking face. I thought it was so funny because it was taking so long. I was like, oh, that's so good. I had a lot of fun with that. I had a lot of fun with Swerve and Brody. And anything else that you guys wanted to call out?
I need to figure out what's going on with the trio titles.
Yeah, that was weird.
Hotshot and Matthew, Kevin Knight and Speedball, and now apparently Mexico.
I will say this. At least those guys don't have any titles.
It is true. There are no double champions in AEW now, which is a really good thing because you don't have that with Hanger. You don't have that with Willow. You don't have that with the Callis family. So that is a very, very healthy thing. Mystico has a dual contract with CMLL. It broke earlier that Claudio now has a CMLL contract as well. I hope to see more of that. I hope to see that with like the MXMTVs of the world. It's like people who aren't getting utilized, getting to work other places that are friendly. But yeah, we can dive into this episode of Dynamite and tie back to Revolution how we desire to. But the big thing is that Will Ospreay is back, which is a huge shot in the arm to the top of the card, particularly on the face side. We have kind of a heel-heavy environment right now, largely also because Kenny Omega is obviously on a somewhat part-time schedule. But he came back to run off Moxley after he had a fantastic match with Takeshita. And then Will Ospreay is back in the ring tonight against Blake Christian. I thought a brilliant choice for a first opponent back. That was really fun. I saw Blake Christian at GCW this weekend, actually, and he is someone they definitely were smart to keep signed. He's underrated, and this kind of went how you would expect it to go because it was Ospreay's return match. You had Blake Christian stalling early in this, getting cocky, and then managing to make Will Ospreay do some work, and of course targeting Will's neck. There were some good counters in this, and it was like a good balance of enough near falls to make it feel competitive without it feeling like the outcome was ever really in doubt for Will Ospreay, because he just blasts him with a hidden blade and gets the win. And then post-match, he calls out Jon Moxley, saying the difference between them is that Ospreay doesn't need a weapon to snap someone's neck. He'll do it with his bare hands, which brings out Moxley and Wheeler Yuta, and all hell breaks loose. You got Ospreay attacking them, throwing trash cans at them, trying to fight them off, and then Pac shows up, which I was like, I will take an order of that, please. I will take one order of Will Ospreay versus Pac, please. Pac is locked in the Brutalizer. Security gets involved. Ospreay comes flying back into the chaos. So if you were like, is Ospreay going to take it easy after his surgically repaired neck? The answer is no. The answer is no. He is so back. But fellas, I'll let you guys dive in. How do you feel about this match, but more importantly, the Will Ospreay return? I think this is a good thing to have at the top of the card when you have MJF as a heel, Swerve as a heel, etc. It's nice to have as much of a baby face because Will Ospreay just is a golden retriever of a human being. So it's nice to see here.
To your point, Blake Christian was a great person to have Will face off in his return. I think it really kind of showed that Will hasn't lost a step, and there's not a lot of rust. Any rust he had, he knocked it off, rehabbing and training. I like the fact that Blake didn't work the neck, the DDTs, but Will and Moxley, I like the fact that we're revisiting this now, and to the point of needing more faces now. I was wondering what they were going to do with Moxley since he was kind of a tweener slash face. And I wonder if they push him back and be more heel with the program with Ospreay again.
You know, I was talking about this on the post show at Fightful after the pay-per-view. And I hope that this is like the version of John Moxley that put Ospreay out is not the version of John Moxley that we have now. So my hope is that like this anti-hero version of John Moxley, where he's a good guy with all these bad friends, and Will Ospreay coming back for him forces the Death Riders to kind of look within and say, like, who is our leader? And like a John Moxley identity crisis would be kind of nice, because we haven't had John Moxley's been a lot of things. He has not been someone that doubts himself. And I don't think he has to doubt himself here, but he needs to doubt his surroundings a little bit. Could be a really, really fun way to go. Ryan, your thoughts on all of this?
I think it's actually on Sunday that Will Ospreay is consistently the most over wrestler I've ever seen.
Yeah.
He walks out and he gets cheers, matter like huge ones. People just love him. I guess it's that golden retriever energy. I think Brian Danielson added a lot to the commentary because of the neck surgery related stuff, to be like, yes, when I got mine, when like, because it goes beyond the wrestling kayfabe world to real life of like, he's someone who can relate to the changes you have to make. Now, clearly Will's not making a ton of them based on some, though. Part of me thinks you're going to show some big moves at the beginning just to prove to everyone that you're still good. And then you might dial it back as, you know, you get a little bit more screen time.
So your point with Danielson, though, he was like, I like that Will Ospreay is mat wrestling right now. Like Danielson, like talking about his own neck surgery and talking very honestly about the way he had to adapt himself a little bit, I thought was good. Will Ospreay, I fear, has that Dragunov thing where he's like, I don't know how to wrestle any other way than at an 11. So this is what you're getting. But continue.
Yeah. So the match, you know, Blake Christian's awesome. And I'm glad he got officially signed and he's incredible. Would have liked to him to come out to his entrance to the song that Jeremy has been begging for. Oh,
Vanilla Baby.
Yep. Vanilla Baby. But the after is interesting because, one, I want to see Ospreay versus Pac just as much as you do. That's going to be incredible. But Joe addressing his Mox, what is this, them pulling him more back into heel? And I actually see them pulling him more back into face. It may be part of the split with, because I still believe he's going to split from the Death Riders at some point. That only because at some time you have to split that group up, and that's the easiest way to go about it.
Sure.
And I could see it from him being almost too facey with Will, because like he shook Takeshita's hand. He's very much like entered this I'll respect you if you need it thing. And it doesn't seem like Pac is that way. It doesn't seem like Claudio's that way. So I could very much see this being the impetus. But if they want to make him more heel, they'll make him more heel. Though I don't know how you do that. The fans want to cheer for him because he's having good matches.
Yeah, I feel like Moxley also just, the one thing that I've learned with him through all this, I'm like, he really does just work better as a face. Like he's just a better, a better face wrestler. And that's great. That is perfectly fine. I think with Will, him going into All In is going to be the call. Like what does that look like? Cause if he's not the one to face MJF at All In, are they really going to try to, like, where does Ospreay fit into the picture? Because if he's going for that title, he should win it, I guess, is what I'm saying. So do they just have him be the one to take it off of Max, or does Will go after a different title? Will be interesting to see. We got some more love in the chat. We got Jamie from Perio Magazine saying, Robbie, dual contract Eagles. He is going to be on Collision. I'm very happy to see my TMDK boys all over ROH and now on AEW Collision. A nice job by commentary setting up that Robbie Eagles was Kyle Fletcher's trainer and these things. But it makes me happy because New Japan is like, I know we lost a bunch of talent, but we're also not going to re-sign TMDK. I'm like, do you want a tag division at all? Is a weird call. But Robbie and Fujita have been doing really good work. But I'm always here for more Robbie Eagles on my team, and always for Robbie getting the respect that he deserves, quite frankly. We got Sloanamite in the chat as well, and Tim McFowell saying Will came back sexier than ever. He looks good. He looks good. Head of hair. Quite the head of lettuce on Will Ospreay these days. You can tell he's getting married soon. He's like, I got to stay in shape. I got to stay looking good. trying to get to the altar.
Get out of shape.
Well, you know what's funny? I had said, like, he seemed like he was like, my neck is injured and I need to reinforce it by putting 10 extra pounds of muscle right specifically, like, in my shoulders and around my neck. Like, he looks so jacked in that specific area. And I was thinking about, like, in COVID, how he went from, like, lean high flyer to, like, the Osprey that we saw before. So he's always transforming his body to work with whatever he's doing in the ring, as reckless as it can seem from a ring standpoint. But also a lot more ink. I know he said his mom hates tattoos, so sorry to Will Ospreay's mom. But let's move along to Moxley and Yuta versus Juice Robinson and Ace Austin. Nice to see Juice and Ace Austin in action here. I also love when wrestling just dovetails their segments. It makes me happy. It makes things flow really naturally. But even after getting jumped by Ospreay, Mox and Yuta still jumped their opponents before the bell on this. And they do get the win here. Juice and Ace having a really nice showing here, though. It's nice to see that stable seemingly more healthy than they've been. I miss Jay White so much. But Moxley's team kind of just getting their heat back here. You had Yuta hitting the Psycho Knee on Juice and Moxley hitting a Death Rider on Ace Austin to win. This was a solid tag match. This whole night felt very weird, and that sometimes happens coming out of AEW pay-per-views because everybody's injured or banged up. I know NXT, I'm sure AEW's had it too. Like, these airport delays are wreaking all sorts of havoc on production and talent getting places, all these things. So this match was good, but this was the beginning of, like, this episode just feels weird. I don't even know if it's, at this point, I was like, I don't even think it's bad. It just feels weird. The crowd wasn't fully into it. Like, I didn't really understand the full purpose of this match, but it was a perfectly fine match. I didn't have a problem with it, but this was the beginning of things just feeling, like, a little bit off. Ryan, what did you think?
Well, first of all, I have to address that Jesse Ozog was asking if that's my desk behind me. What, Jesse, you only have one desk?
Well, I mean, it's a fair question.
Yeah,
you also can have a broken clock on your monitor because it just stays the same.
Well, it just paused.
All right, well, I'm just saying, like, those papers are never sorted through. Do you ever just, like, dust anything? I mean, come on.
No. No, I have someone for that.
It's a fair question.
One thing I noticed that is that Juice got a lot of Juice chants. Maybe they should take advantage of the fact that he's very, very popular with fans still. I know they've had a rough go of it between his injury and Switchblade's injury and the one gun injury. And I'm blanking which one it was. Colton injury. So, yeah, but they need to recognize that Juice is still very, very over. And Ace Austin is incredible. So, like, adding him in was great, but they need to. I had the right person there, right? Ace Austin? All right, Joe gave a look and I thought, did I say the wrong name? Yeah.
No, you're good.
So, adding him in was great, but that they need to do something with them more. And truthfully, that they have options if they want to take it. Yeah, I wasn't sold on this match for whatever reason. It didn't seem to have the, you know what it was?
Time filler. Like, it just
yeah, it was there. Overshadowed by the before. You had the brawl before, so it overshadowed the match instead of just like, yeah, that's, it just didn't feel like it meant anything.
Yeah, it felt filler to me. Joe, what did you think?
It served its purpose. It, like you said, it got the heat back for the Death Riders. It felt like somewhere between a Rampage match or a Collision match from maybe, I don't know, 6 months ago, 8 months ago.
Sure.
just kind of thrown together. My only takeaway was looking at Wheeler wrestling in trunks with a shaved head. He looked kind of like if the Ringmaster had a smaller, eviler twin.
Okay, I can see it.
So are we getting Stone Cold Wheeler Yuta?
I'm here for it.
I can see that. I feel like maybe a nephew situation with Wheeler. He could pull off the bald. I gotta say, like, he looks all right. I'm not mad about it. We have Kylie in the chat who said she wanted to, she's watching the show, but she wanted to pop in and say hi and that she loves us all and she loves the Mark Order family as much as the SGS family. Thank you, Kylie. We always love it when you're here. You're always amazing vibes. Amazing vibes, which is more than I could say for this coffin match. This was bad and weird.
If you want to describe it, Kate, can I just describe it real quick?
Sure.
Watch the first 5 minutes. It's a car crash.
Touche. Touche. This was the second week in a row they tried to do a pre-tape into a live spillover, and it has worked neither time. The dogs losing on Sunday, I thought was a bad call, and for Darby to win this, I feel like makes it even more stupid. You need a trio like the dogs to feel important and get wins, and if Darby didn't need to get anything back out of it, that's dumb. I am not a Darby Allin hater, as some people are. Certainly my co-host and Alex Pulowski is frequently, but we have gone on a little bit too much with this. Darby just beating the hell out of a guy who's unconscious and in a straitjacket is a face is bad. That's dumb. That's stupid. It's illegal. And that's not babyface behavior. And I liked Danielson on commentary being like, why doesn't he just put him in the coffin if he's unconscious in his straitjacket? This was horribly produced. Like, the chemistry was just weird, maybe because Gabe Kidd was fighting in a fucking straitjacket. But, like, whoever put this match together just did a bad job. Like, this made no sense. The pre-tape into the ring was so bad. I hated this, to be honest. And I actually really liked, like, the refreshed image of Gabe Kidd, like, when he wasn't Death Rider Gabe Kidd when he first came in. Like, the initial matches with Darby, I felt like had so much heat, and then they built it out into the trios angle, and it was good. This was just bad. Like, I thought this was maybe the worst coffin match that they've done. I hated it. Almost everything about it failed, and I feel like it was a tremendous mistake to bury the dogs on their way in. I think it was really stupid. And it feels like they went out of their way to bury them, though I don't believe it was their intent. But it's like Dave Finley shows up, Roddy Strong takes him out with an elbow, which is fine. He's Roddy fucking Strong. Like, he knows what he's doing in there to make it look good. Right after the dogs win, Roddy Strong takes him out. Then they lose the match on pay-per-view. And then Darby, as a babyface, after a car accident with an unconscious Gabe Kidd, puts him in a straitjacket, continues to beat the hell out of him. What? And then he wins? This is bad. And normally I'd be like, you know what? If Darby is turning because his recklessness is like bringing him to the dark side, I'd say that's good. But no, he announces that he's going to go after MJF after all this. I hated all of this. I thought it was trash. Joe, we'll start with you. What did you think? Were you a little softer on this than I was? Because I was like, bleh.
No, it was... I'm tired of coffin matches. I think we've done too many of them. They don't feel special. I don't know why you would challenge Darby to a coffin match since he never loses them. Also, don't love the idea of beating Game Kid like this, like you said.
Yeah.
Darby, I don't mind his regular matches, but all the extra gimmicky stuff they do sometimes to try to go over the top of things isn't for me with him. And I know he gets away with a lot of it because he's smaller and people like the fact that he does all these crazy stuff because he's a small, I guess, underdog compared to some of the other opponents. But
yeah,
it's not for me. The best part, I guess, of this match was that hopefully it gets Game Kid and the dogs away from Darby. So hopefully they can build the dogs back up again so they can, you know, God forbid, go after a trio title or, you know, establish themselves as the trios, you know, take on the Death Riders, just, you know. And I guess, I don't know, just really force their way and make themselves violent again.
Yeah, I feel like they now have the pieces for the trios division. You added the Rascals, you added the Dogs. They like could get out of this chokehold of putting them on a tag team with a world champion, which is still what they did with Mystico, by the way, because he's champion at CMLL. So and that was also very weird on the pay-per-view because Speedball and Kevin Knight hadn't been in the same ring together as a tag team in forever. So that was all really weird on Sunday. I hate it more in retrospect, but I do hope that they are shaping up the division to function like a division again. Ryan, I certainly have my complaints about this match and the booking. I just thought this was so horribly put together. You're generally lighter on things than me. What'd you think?
I don't like the match that much at all. I don't like starting out with a car crash. I think just think that's stupid because, like, I know wrestling is
not even go wrestle a match after that.
Well, that's my thing. Like, I know wrestling is supposed to you're supposed to suspend your disbelief, and these guys do things that, in retrospect, may kill some people. But in everybody's brain, even within wrestling, a car crash is like deemed like super serious. Like, you don't want like
sure.
So that I don't love what they've done with the Dogs. Truthfully, the decision to have Darby, not only Darby Windsnipe, but the mic after, I don't like it, but it actually made sense and improved it, because at least you're making the whole thing is that Darby's going for the championship. If Darby beats the Dogs and just goes nowhere, what are we doing? This way, at least, the Gabe is losing to the next
for a reason. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Gabe lost to the next big number one contender. So I get that. I don't love it. They're easily rebuildable at this point. Like, you haven't killed them or anything. They go and they win a bunch and everyone forgets, especially because AEW audience will be dying for them to be successful. My issue with Darby, and I've had this for a while now, is his whole gimmick is supposed to be he uses his body to hurt you, but he hurts himself. And I happen to hear, and I don't feel like we get a lot of that out of him anymore. Like, I don't feel, like, there was some of that tonight. The car crash actually was an example of that. He was willing to, but like, I feel like a lot of times it's not. And there was I don't know whose podcast it was. It was an ex-wrestler talking about Mankind, Mick Foley, how the goal was like, he'll take double the pain just to inflict a little bit on you. And that's who Darby's supposed to be, that he'll take more. And I don't feel like you get that a lot out of him anymore. And that always bothers me with him. Like,
no, it's gone very stale. It's gone very stale. I'm hoping like maybe my favorite Darby match outside of like Will Ospreay in the C2 and maybe one or two other ones. Like was against MJF, like the initial headlock takeover thing, like it all worked really well. So I'm optimistic that maybe we do something good with Darby, but it's really getting old. Like it's just getting very, very formulaic. And to your point, like it's losing its luster a little bit. And part of what I had said before of like this oversaturation of, ultra violence. I feel like Darby he used to feel like everything was a 7 out of 10 spot. And it's like, okay, yeah, but I just saw someone eat barbed wire 3 days ago. Like it doesn't have the same impact. So, I don't know.
Think about it. He's the only character who hasn't really changed or evolved. Major character. Like if you really think of all the AEW people, like even someone like Orange Cassidy, who you could say is he's evolved. He started out as a comedy character showing no effort. And now he's like, yes, he still has his low effort stuff, but he's had moments where he's yelling. He's had moments where he's clear. He cares. He had the international title and did all those defenses. Like he has evolved as a character. It hasn't been this big moment just slowly over time. Darby is the same as when he came in. And I think that's a detriment to him.
I mean, I think you could argue the Sting stuff like was a leap forward and having like his.
How is he different? How has anything been different for him? Though?
I think the belief is that like we saw him at that point doing stuff for other people, right? And like under tutelage, but like it certainly pales in comparison to the evolution that we got with like an Orange Cassidy. Like, I think that's a very fair thing to say. Like, that felt, and it also feels just undone because like Sting's not around anymore, and then he kind of just goes back to being this guy.
That's what I'm saying. He just feels like the least changed out of everyone I can think of in AEW.
And I also, not for nothing, but it's like, bro, you went and decided to climb Everest instead of, I'm sure MJF will call this out because he's really good at this. But like, you went and climbed Everest instead of going for the title last time. Like, I don't feel like you actually care about it. No. Like, I just, it doesn't read as you give a shit about the world title. So they're going to have to do some work with that to make me care about it. I do appreciate that they're shaking things up at the top of the card, but this was not a good match. We have Kenny Omega and Swerve Strickland exchanging responses here. We get Kenny with a message aimed at Swerve proposing a winner-takes-all scenario involving Swerve's number one contendership. And then we also have Swerve later, very calmly but dangerously, calling himself Mr. Danger, saying how he's chased this his entire career and that he wants a rematch with Kenny, but he wants something bigger and he wants his EVP status. And if Swerve wins, he becomes a new EVP. That is a hell of a stipulation to make the rematch feel really big if it weren't for the fact that there is a promo in which Kenny says he's no longer an EVP. In AEW canon, he's already given this up, and there are some continuity czars back in AEW creative that I'm kind of surprised missed that or dismissed that. But I was like, this would be great if Kenny didn't already give this up, but he did. I don't think it matters too much because I have the feeling Kenny's going over anyway. I think he's probably up for Darby pretty soon, especially with those Canada dates around the corner. So I don't know. I just was kind of like, this would be so cool had it not already been addressed in kayfabe. Ryan, we'll start with you and then we'll ping pong over to Joe.
Wait, when did Kenny give up his EVP?
Like right when he came back in that feud with Takeshita, he had said that he doesn't have the baggage of being an EVP anymore.
Oh, I don't remember that at all. Clearly they don't either. Listen, I liked the promo. I hate the stipulation either way. What is the purpose of giving Swerve the EVP? That's just, and well, either he loses and power, doesn't get it.
And because he loves nothing more than making the lives of the former EVPs miserable, yeah, but right? Like,
that is so, we just went through this with the Bucks' EVP. Like, we're barely, like, that's such a played out storyline. I hate, like, I guess, just it's my personal thing, I hate that storyline of like the heel has power and abuses it. It's been done so many times. Just
yeah, but my part, what I was saying was like, it's his character arc is that he has already done everything he could to Hangman. He's already done everything he could to the Young Bucks. Now he's trying to take out Kenny Omega, and the crowning achievement of wiping out the Elite would be taking the power that they all gave up or lost. So I think it works for him as a character, but I understand what you're saying.
Oh, I have nothing to do with the character. Within character,
doesn't work anywhere.
No, within character, it makes whatever. I'm. This is more just straight up writing, I guess you'd say. Like, why is Swerve, like, you're going to hamstring yourself now to the fact that he's going to be the evil heel with power. He's going to be what has literally existed in wrestling since the mid 90s and has been super annoying. And you just got the Bucks away from the EVP title because people were getting sick of it. Don't do it again. You can avoid it very easily.
I think it works with this character because the motivation is very clear, but I also understand being very tired of that trope. Like that makes perfect sense to me.
You get it. Okay, for one storyline that, and but then you have the next one and he still has that power, and you have the next one and he still has that power. Like, that's the problem.
He's been chasing all the guys that had that power, and he didn't, like, he tried to do things the right way with Will Ospreay and dismantle the Young Bucks from having that, right? And so now that he's a bad guy, he's like, you know what, I specifically went out of my way to not try and take it, so I'm going to try and take it. Makes sense to me.
But again, we're talking two different things. You're talking his character, and I'm talking the writing. You'll get one story of him with that power within the Elite. I get it. But then he has that power going forward. So every story he's in, he has to use that power.
Yeah, but I don't think he's using it anyway. Cool. I don't think he's winning it.
Then why even, like, I guess the whole thing just is
to throw some stakes on it and to motivate a rematch, I think. But I think what LT's got it that Kenny is winning and we get MJF and Kenny in a dynasty because it's in Canada. But Joe, do you think you're on Ryan's side here, or do you agree with me because I'm right and pretty?
Can I be on my own side since I'm in the middle?
Yes, but you're definitely very pretty, though. So, like, you lean my way a little bit.
Well, we are both wearing blue.
It's true. It brings out our eyes.
Hey, Kate, I just want to say.
Did you just call me ugly? You basically called me ugly by playing that. That is so rude.
The easy key thing, I get that, like you said, they needed some kind of stake put on this thing. Other than, I thought you could have achieved that just by saying, you know, I just want your spot in the pecking order of, of championship title shots. So I don't know what the EVP thing does for him. We talked about it here a minute ago about when him and Ospreay beat the Bucks and they were pseudo EVPs for a week and then they gave that up. So apparently that wasn't important to him then. I don't know. To me, it wasn't necessary to have an EVP stipulation. I think we could have got there by just wanting Omega's spot because he's been the golden child of AEW since day one.
Sure. I think that's fair. I'm just letting you guys know that I would like to be the EVP of this podcast. So I think my record speaks for itself. With how consistently I'm around, I feel like
this is very senior management.
I should probably have like a stronger say in things. So, guys, thanks for chatting along with us. I was just promoting on the old Twitter machine that Ryan said I am pretty much too ugly to be on camera. That's essentially what I heard. So why Ryan hates women, I don't know. But
is that why you're only here about once every 3 weeks or once every month?
Yeah, we can't coexist. Like, we can't.
You're Sherlock. I can't even retweet it to prove that you're right.
Well, this I quite liked. Speedball versus Mark Davis. Mark Davis is pissed because he lost the trio's titles. Speedball says that he's following in Kenny Omega's footsteps because he's Canadian and he is a former trio's champion, just like Kenny Omega. And he also just seems very nice that Kenny Omega does. But Mark Davis bringing some power in this. Mike Bailey just continuing to be very impressive. One thing I love that AEW has the room for is people to just be over on their wrestling. And that's been Mike Bailey's trajectory since he's come in. People were like, he's got a cool mullet and I like him in the ring. I like you. I'm cheering for you every time. And it's great. Like, we have these huge chops and pile driver and we got a BT bomb tease. And it feels like Mike Bailey was done for. Like, they put together a nice little hope spot here, and then we get the time and adventure hit by the Ultimo weapon for the win for Speedball Mike Bailey. This felt in a very weird episode like something good. I liked this made sense and the match was good. Joe, do you agree with me because I'm so pretty funny and smart?
You're here. the match itself was great. Like the components of it, I'm not sure what we're achieving with pushing Speedball with a singles win while we also push Kevin Knight you know, at a singles winner while they have the trio championships. And I thought we were trying to push Mark Davis more as a singles guy too as well, but I didn't like the fact that he lost to Seaball. I don't know. It's the match itself was fine. Outcome wasn't sold on.
Yeah, and I think it's tough because, like, they're trios champions. They should be in a trio, but, like, I just, these episodes right after a pay-per-view, it's like everybody's banged up. I haven't heard anything, like, but it feels like everyone's banged up. Mystico also works somewhere else. Like, CMLL is sold out every week on his back, so I don't know, like, if he's around or whatever, but I liked it for what it was because it made sense. It was good in the ring, but not a lot of that happened on the show tonight was. But I agree with you, like, what is going on with Speedball and Jet Speed as a whole? Because it's like you have Kevin Knight in singles matches, but they're trios champions together, and they were wrestling tag matches, but now they're not. Like, it's very confusing. Speaking of confusing, I don't know why Ryan's face looks like that, but I guess we'll get his thoughts. You can have all the sound effects you want, pal.
I would do the fountain sound effect, but apparently it goes on for a very, very, very long time.
You can pause it, though.
I know, but, like, I just thought I'd let it play to the end before the show, and it just kept going. I like that they keep Mark Davis wrestling, like, that he didn't get thrown to the wayside. You know, he was obviously in line to be part of a big tag team that was going to be awesome. I'm just glad that they're keeping him around. Like, didn't go, oh, your tag team fell apart. Here you go.
Yeah.
Speedball is incredible, and that fans love him because he just goes out there and does what he does. The kick to the back of the head was awesome. The trios thing, I'm happy that the champs don't have any other AEW belts.
Yes, that is good.
But it feels like this is all in
Speed and a guy again. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And it also feels like it's in service to splitting up the eventual split of Jet Speed, which you could have done without the belt.
Yes, I agree with that too. Sorry, somebody sent me something that I should pay attention to right now. So I'm going to set up this Marina situation and tell you that I thought it was stupid. I don't know why Marina Shafir loses to Toni Storm to then lose to Mina Shirakawa. The big thing of this is who took out Toni Storm. I'm pretty positive it was Ronda Rousey, but from my understanding, Toni Storm is supposed to be sidelined for the foreseeable future, and that it's probably longer term. I think Sean had heard that. I certainly heard that. So I think Toni Storm is going to be absent for a little bit. Why you build Marina to be the problem, to be this badass, to be a threat, to lose to Marina Shafir or Mina Shirakawa, who just doesn't win on television, sucks. The breakaway champagne bottle spot, though, was great. So I liked that. But I didn't like the booking. But I also feel like this might have happened on very short notice. So... Ryan, we'll start with you and then ping pong it to Joe, and I'm just going to see what this person wants. 1 second.
All right, I have a theory that's in no way accurate, but I'm going to go with it, and that is that Mina attacked Toni, and she's actually a bad person, and she was in the room because she initiated the attack, and that's part of why she got the win tonight, because we're going to start an arc where she secretly, you start to see her evil come out. And again, there is no justification for me saying this. I just think it'd be the most fun outcome of the whole thing, which is we slowly start to see her evil over the course of months. And this way, whenever Toni does return, sooner or later, whatever, she has an instant feud with Mina to rebuild into. Otherwise, yeah, I don't get why she wins against Marina. You just built Marina up to have her lose. You're right about the breakaway bottle spot. That was cool. I was wondering if we were going to see Ronda at the end of the match. I'm glad we didn't. I don't think that would have helped tonight at all. But I don't get it. I'll just leave it at that. So that's why I'm going with the Mina caused the injury.
Joe, you know, I did think about that. I did think about the whole Mina might have caused injuries, so she was in the locker room and right there at the thing. I don't like the booking outcome as well. I don't think Mina was credible to beat Marina. I'm torn because, one, a part of me doesn't think that she should beat Marina in a no-holds-barred match. But on the other hand, because of no-holds-barred, it allowed Mina to use the champagne bottle as the one way to beat Marina. But to Brian Danielson's point, no-holds-barred, I guess, apparently means that you can use weapons. And it's not just, holding onto a hold for a long period of time. Which, I guess that's a thing.
I just don't understand what's so wrong with holding your bards these days.
You know, no one wants to. But I do have to admit, okay, guys, I'm going to release the scoop so that Mark Ward has, I know what's going on with Tony. She's time traveling.
She's timeless.
Do you need to time travel when you're timeless, though?
That's the problem. She shouldn't be. And she got caught.
Okay.
She was running from time because she was timeless. She kept running away from it and it finally caught her.
I actually did just get a message about a scoop that's going to be up this weekend. I wonder if that's what it actually is.
I wonder. At what point does she become time more?
Whenever she comes back, it'd be so funny if she just added one thing to make it like she aged a few years.
What if she became time cop Tony Storm?
Jean-Claude.
Terrible movie. I would see it again and again.
It's Tony Khan's favorite.
So bad, but so good.
It's time for the main event. Keep chatting along with us. Joe goes, <"Meh." laughs> we get this really fun backstage with Okada, who's like, Takeshita's out here shaking hands with Jon Moxley. Can you believe that? I'm loyal to one family and one family only. Lyric said this on Twitter, and it's so funny and true. Okada gets so taken aback whenever he's held accountable, and it's just like the funniest, most charming character trait of like, how dare you hold me accountable for my words and actions? Ridiculous. Also, it's enough. Okada, share your skincare routine or don't, because he is just constantly having like the most beautiful glowing skin. But we do have that promo for him. I don't know why we're dragging out Takeshita and Okada. I was really hoping Takeshita would have a belt and Okada would have a belt and they would unify those belts when those two did face each other, which I guess is still possible, but oh my God, let's get it in gear. But this was fun. You had the Young Bucks and Jack Perry, who arrived on the Jurassic Express as driven by a dinosaur, which I think is just irresponsible. I don't think you should have dinosaurs driving buses, especially because they have very tiny arms.
They only have one arm.
And he had it in a sling. And I don't know if he passed a look, there's like, not to be controversial, but there's a lot of like questions about licenses right now and like identifying gender. Like if you have to identify species now, I don't know if he has a license. So I'm just saying, like, for me, I would not allow a dinosaur to drive my bus, especially a one-armed one. But that, I'm not Jack Perry. He is hanging out with his squirrel and he gets picked up. This is all well and good. The Bucks are just fantastic. Like, if you have a weird episode of a wrestling show, Nick Jackson wrestling is a pretty good way to bail yourself out of it. Like, this was really good. You have the Young Bucks and Jack Perry winning. Surprise, surprise, Rocky Romero took the EVP trigger for the loss here, but this was fast-paced. Okada was super smug in it, which is very fun. You get the Bucks with their big sequences in it. Jack Perry looks good in here, too. But we get a post-match promo from the Bucks that say that FTR were the better team on Sunday, but they're going to claw their way back up to the top. They reference having all of their children in the ring with them and how important all that was. And out come Copeland and Christian. And Copeland says, you guys are way too good for this, like, self-doubt. Basically, you guys are the best of your generation. And Christian essentially says, we want to face you. in Vancouver. And Christian says, like, we want to prove to you that we're not only the best of our generation, we're the best of your generation too, which is great. So Dynasty is going to have FTR versus Copeland and Cage Part 2 for the tag titles. This was FTR and Stokely showing up. Stokely can walk again. It's a miracle. He does not need the wheelchair. But I feel like we're headed toward a TLC match. It just feels like these three teams and that stipulation, be it in Canada or all in, it feels like that's going to be the way to go. I don't have a problem with the Christian and Cope last run. I think that could be very, very fun. What do you guys think? The floor is open.
Go for it, Ryan.
I have a couple thoughts. One, the squirrel on Jack Perry's hand just popped me huge. That was just so out of place and just so funny. I think the Don Callis family might be a cult. The way they talk about him, like, we love you, Don, and stuff. Yeah, it's just like when Trent is saying we love you, Don, I'm like, this is weird. The match itself was fine. I'm with you. They need to get the Takeshita Okada thing done. It's their drag. We're not done. Like, properly started. Like, into the phase of matches, because they've dragged it on too long. I thought that's why Takeshita lost, because I understand your theory, the verge. My theory was Takeshita losing allows Okada to keep harping on him. Finally, Takeshita snaps. But you just make it happen at this point. I know some people don't love the Copeland and Christian thing. I think obviously there's a generation who that tag team just isn't a thing for them at all. But I would remind people that, one, Christian has been nothing but a delight in his entire time in AEW. He has been awesome. And Copeland, the Copeland challenge was awesome too. He had a little bit of a rough spot after that when he came back from injury, where people were kind of like, what are you doing? But when he first started and did the open challenge, it was incredible stuff. So, like, they've done pretty well on, like, the two of them have actually, I think, delivered in their stuff. They haven't been like, they haven't felt like these washed up guys. You're like, why? And because they've been away for so long, it's not like you're like, oh no, they've dominated TV. Give them this last run. The key, though, to me is that FTR shouldn't beat them and the Young Bucks shouldn't beat them. Have someone else beat them.
Yeah, you gotta start raising these younger teams a little bit. I agree with that too. 100%. 100%.
FTR and the Young Bucks don't need to beat them for some torch passing thing. Those two teams are too established to need that. But you have them win. You have them win a few feuds, even beat some younger teams that, like, come close. But then you have one newer team or honest, like, team climbing to the mountaintop beat them. And that makes them.
I agree. I agree with that entirely, which is gross. I don't like agreeing with Ryan. But what do you have to say about it, Joe?
The match itself was fine. I think that the things I had of note was it looked like the Young Bucks have added some more double team moves to their repertoire. So I felt like that helped freshen up their matches a little bit more. Also, I think this is the second time that Jack Perry has bit Okada in the junk.
We got a triple dick bite in this. That was new.
And going to the earlier backstage promo part with the Don Callis coming, I'm kind of hoping that maybe Okada is the antagonist of this Don Callis family civil war. I think every time he keeps kneeling to Tesca and seeing some of the family members' reactions when he does it, I think it's interesting to see where people, you know, what side people take. So I very much would like to see that as a way to implode the Don Callis family.
I'm also so intrigued that now that Ospreay is back, if, like, I feel like we're going to get into a custody battle over Kyle Fletcher sooner than later. Like, I think it's going to be Takeshita breaks away and wants to bring Fletcher with him, and Okada wants him to stay, because Kyle Fletcher should be moving up the card. But the idea of Will Ospreay being like, I've been where you're at and I got myself out of it too. And like, I'm proud of you for leaving would be really, really, really cool. Would be really, really, really cool. So I'm here for all of that. I think it could be fun. I'm glad something is like moving and shaking a little bit with the Don Callis was in recruitment mode for so long. Now we're at least like, we have some stories that need to get into gear, but they are at least there, which is a good thing. So yeah, Jamie is saying Kyle on a pole match. If anybody could sell that idea, it's Kyle Fletcher. 100%. But that's our weird little episode of Dynamite. It was not great. We have a two-part collision this weekend. Hopefully we get back to our regularly scheduled program next Wednesday for Dynamite. And I think that sometimes after these very long, intensive pay-per-views, the Dynamites after them are not always the best, which is okay, because they've been on a heater before that. So what LT asking where Eddie is? He's had some health stuff going on with, like, not an injury, but with headaches. I know he was on the ROH tapings and has been working collision a little bit, but he's cleared, like, he can work, but he's, I think, not necessarily like in full form right now. So they're kind
of migraines. They said he went back home because of migraines.
Yeah, that's brutal. I would not be mad about Ortiz and Eddie having a tag run. I mean, that's just like for me, but that could be a very, very, very fun thing. Like after Cope and Christian to put those two together, that would be.
I'm here for it too, but migraines are a bitch and you can't really wrestle with them. So
no, they're awful. They're awful. They're just a great way to puke immediately.
Yes.
But that'll wrap up our show for this week. All three of us in the house at the same time. You know what we didn't talk about, which this will actually be good to close on? MJF gave a great promo, really, really, really good promo, in which he said he was going to Disney World at the end, but worth checking out. If there's anything you guys want to call out from it specifically, feel free to, but he does just a really good job of saying, like, he's the GOAT. He's had the best dog collar match, the best Texas death match, all these things, but it was just a very good, straightforward heel promo. He's really good in these, like, post-match pre-tapes, which is funny because it's like that's basically what all of New Japan is built around, and he's like always talking about how New Japan is a glorified indie, but his post-match taped promos aren't the best. So there you go. Jamie saying take your wife on a honeymoon, dude. Yeah, Alicia too's got another long while, I think, before she's able to go on a honeymoon with her husband. But if you guys want to call anything out about that, and then we'll get out of here.
That's incredible that he's only 30.
It is, he is a young baby. That Texas Deathmatch was his birthday gift to himself, which is insane. But he can barely walk. He's such a young goat. That's it. But,
I mean, how many more years do you have till you're 30, Kate?
I've got about six more. Yeah. I'm 24 years old, and I'm learning the way through my mid-20s, which is definitely how old I am. So, Joe, thank you for pointing out how young I am. I really appreciate it since Ryan called me ugly before. Where can the good people find you?
Oh, I'm over on social media still at _AsianJoe, and still haven't done a serial review in a minute. Mainly because I haven't found any good cereal to review.
Okay.
So I am still seeking recommendations.
Throw recommendations his way. You are letting people down. You are letting people down.
I learned by watching Ryan.
I learned it watching you. Ryan, if someone were perhaps not there for history or way over there for history, or near for history, but perhaps here for history. Do you know where they could perhaps read about such history and perhaps even partake in YouTube videos about history?
No.
Okay. It's been a great show. Thank you so much for joining.
First, you can follow me on all our socials at Mark Order Pod. But as Kate was queuing me up, I have a blog that I do need to update with some of the new stuff I've done because I've got a new way of doing it. Basically, the blog will be what I do on video just written out, hereforhistory.com, and then YouTube, Here for History, and at underscore Here for History on socials. Nothing new this week because what I thought I recorded had a critical error to it. So nope. And yeah. So I will have something out next week and a little more consistent after that. Maybe I'll throw in some different ideas too, so that I can space out some stuff. But
I'll be about it. I was going to make a joke about being like, why don't you go get sick for 6 more weeks? But I was sick for like a year, so I can't even.
You're still sick. Who are you kidding?
Ugh, sick in the head. Crazy. Jamie said I'm so sassy today. All sass and ass, baby. That's me today. You can find me at Fight Club. Not talking about Fight Club, but talking about wrestling at Fight Club. And you can follow me at Miss Kate Fabe on social media. I'm at the end of a 30-day Instagram challenge where I have posted something every day for 30 days because I am terrible at being consistent. But if you tell me money is involved, I will do it. And I was part of a challenge that was financially motivated. So my last day of that is today. I will be back at it once I blessedly move out of this apartment. I'm looking forward to that, especially with New Japan coming back to the States for some stuff. Like there's going to be July G1 stuff happening in Chicago and all sorts of stuff. So we'll be talking about that a little bit more too, but leave a thumbs up on this video. Please subscribe to the Mark Order Podcast if you're not already subscribed. It goes a long way at helping us out here on YouTube and audio platforms where you can rate us 5 stars, even though Ryan's on it. And I know that wants to bring you down to like a 3. Keep in mind that Joe and I are here too. Please round up. Put us in the Tokyo Dome. You know what I mean? Like just give us those extra stars. We're gonna get out of here. Thank you for hanging out with us tonight. I know it wasn't the best episode of Dynamite, but it's always a great time here at the Mark Order Podcast where we say goodbye and good night, and then Ryan dictates the production cues to close the show.
I put on the outro overlay, then I find the outro song. Before I hit, I say Kate sucks.
Ryan's mean.